So my name is Zhe Hua. I come from Zendesk, Singapore. So my topic today is pretty different from the previous two talks, and I'm going to talk about how small teams could get ready for SRE. So think about this as like maybe LinkedIn in 2005 or Baidu in 2003 and so on. So I didn't have that slide before, so just now I saw the other guys have this, so I'm just adding one slide. So my name is Zhe Hua. I've been with Zendesk Singapore for about 2 years and a half. And before that, I worked in various startups, and some of them are no longer startups, and some of them no longer exist. But so I'm leading the tooling team in Zendesk Singapore now. So that's all about me. Okay, so into the problem that I'm dealing with today in today's talk. So first of all, what do you mean by a small team, right? So for me, I saw this as like it could be like the entire engineering team or ops team in a small company, whereby you have like maybe fewer than 50 employees, engineers, or it could be in a small departments or small teams within a large company, and your team has relatively independent and complete control of what you're doing and how you do things. So I don't know, maybe how many of you, just have a show of hands, how many of the audience are from that fit into this small team definition? Okay, cool. So I was a bit worried because I think the registration fee of $600 scare away the small teams, and only big corps could afford this. But I'm glad to see a few people here. So how do small teams get started with SRE? So that's the question that I'm trying to ask. And so if you look at the SRE book, it's like 34 chapters and 500 plus pages, and if you do a search on Google, you have like 3 million results. So how should we get started? So let me take a step back. So today I'm going to have a case study from Singapore, Zendesk Singapore office. And so we belong to like the second category. Like Zendesk as a whole has like hundreds of engineers, and there were only like 10 engineers in Singapore office like 3 years ago. So, but the unique things about Zendesk Singapore is that we have full control over the chat product among the entire Zendesk product suite. So we decide what to do with the chat product, and we decide how to do it. So does that fits nicely into the second category of my definition of a small team. And I'm going to share with you how did we get into this whole entire SRE landscape. Right, so let me take a step back and share with you a little bit of the history of the Zendesk Singapore office. So it all started with a local startup called Zopin, and founded by a few founders in 2008. And in 6 years later, in 2014, Zopin was acquired by Zendesk, just right before Zendesk IPO. And today, as of last year, the Zopin brand is fully rebranded as Zendesk Chat, and so that indicates like the completion of the integration process about the acquisition. So there are a few problems that bothered us in the past two or three years. So first thing is that the team size has grown from 10 engineers in two teams into like 40 engineers in eight teams. So that is like a 4x growth. And the second part of the problem is that the focus of the product has shifted. So in 2014, we mainly care about like SME customers. We develop SME small features for small companies, and it's pretty much a standalone product. So it was a private company, so there was no compliance issues to worry about. But nowadays, it has a lot more features, and we develop like. We are trying to upsell and do more enterprise features, And we have to worry about integration with other Zendesk products in the entire suite of products. So, and Zendesk IPO public company, and there are different compliance issues that we have to worry about. So the combination of these two, like growth in the team size and shift in the product focus, leads to a bunch of issues. So in productivity and site reliability, right? So we find it hard to onboard new hires, harder to do deployments. There are more incidents, and because of the support for enterprise customers, they have different level of SLA that we need to meet, and things that we used to take for granted, right, that kind of failures might no longer be acceptable by enterprise customers. So how do we deal with all these problems? Do we have a solution? So we didn't have a solution. So we just started a series of engineering initiatives, hoping to tackle those issues one by one, and hopefully by the end of that, like when we are done with all these different projects, we get to a better, much better situation. Right, so I'm just going to iterate to some of these projects. So first of all, engineering dedication. So what happened in the past? So there were no dedicated engineering teams, resources. So it was like two technical co-founders leading like feature teams and doing feature developments to build up the products. And engineering issues, they were fixed when they are encountered and in a very ad hoc manner. So around the time of the acquisition, like in 2014, the founders started to think about should we hire a real director of engineering. Like by a director of engineering, a real one, I mean like someone who could spend time worrying about engineering issues, not about product issues. Right. So you would think that this is like a nice job, a director in a high chair and so on, but in fact it is a very tough job. Right? You need to work very hard. So what did that director of engineering do? So we hire a few more engineers. We try various ways to clear technical debts. Just now you saw in the linking graph, like the first 7 years accumulated a lot of technical debts. So we were in a similar situation. So we managed to negotiate with product and get a commitment to dedicate a full quarter to tackle technical debt and engineering issues. And subsequently trying to fight for like, time for engineering weeks and so on. Again, to dedicate time to clear technical debts and fix technical issues. And then we decided to spawn up engineering teams from the feature teams. So these are teams that are dedicated to backend stacks, and they support feature development from the front end and so on. And they also spend time on scalability and reliability. Right, so that was a good first step, but what we realized was that this wasn't enough. And then after a year and a half after the new director of engineering coming on board, we decided to build up a new team that is dedicated to tooling and reliability. So no feature work development for this team. This team works closely with DevOps and develop tools to support developers and also improve production reliability. So this team the formation of this team is the key milestone for all the other projects that I'm going to talk about later, because it is this team that does all those work. Okay, so the first thing that we attempt to tackle is actually very simple. It's a simple deployment process. Right, so in the past, manual deployment. So you don't laugh at this, but this is what you used to do. Like, so SSH into the server, copy and paste some script that you used to keep, and then run them, and it works. So it somehow is error prone, and only a few engineers can do it. Like, very few engineers has the right sudo access and knows what script to run to deploy the whole thing. So we did something called paired deployment. Right, so but this is really just we are paired and staring at the same computer screen. So it's nothing much, it's pretty manual. So as you can understand, you can see, right, this gradually becomes a bottleneck as more and more engineers coming on board and they all want to do deployments. And as we have more teams and develop more features, we are going to do more frequent deployments and and that few people who are only able to do this, these few people who can only do that, becomes a bottleneck, right? So we need to enable all other developers to do that. So so what we did was that we adopted a tool called Samson, which is developed by Zendesk and it's open source. So we consolidated all the deployment script that lies here and there and in different people's notepad and that they used to copy and paste and put them into Samson so that as an end result, any engineer can do deployments. So this actually enables a whole lot of possibilities. So it somehow Samson comes with a special feature that satisfies some sort of a compliance requirements, right? For this thing called SOC 2, which you require to sell enterprise licenses, it requires that every deployment to production needs to have a plus one from another deployer, right? So Samson happens to have that feature. It took 1 quarter to migrate all these deployments over. Like the team was basically just me at that time. So so I was very happy that we did that, but the adoption for the deployment was initially slow because people were used to the old script copy and paste and SSS and full control of the how you run the commands. But eventually, as more and more new engineers come in on board, the adoption was eventually picked up. And once the engineers get used to it, they stick to it because it's super easy to use. And easy to use, less error prone. And it's basically have no chance of making errors unless the script itself is wrong. Right, so engineers started to take over ownership and maintain the deployment scripts and add new deployments for new apps when they create new ones. And as an end result, my team doesn't have to do a lot more those work. So we can step back and went into a consultation mode. When they need help, we'll help them. But if they don't need that, they will just do all the work. So this is pretty cool. So we can chill and relax. OK, so next project is about staging environments. So again, a bit of history. There was no usable and shareable staging environment at that time. There was one previous attempt to set up a staging environment. It's pretty ad hoc, and it's not maintainable in the sense that only one person knew that. And once the person left the company, it's basically couldn't be maintained anymore. Right, so no one else was able to use that. So, and then Zendesk as a global company has a staging environment for the rest of the products. But that's just not for chats. So we need to build our own. So you may be wondering, so if you don't have a staging environment, where would your developers test your chains after they have done your local development? And what's even worse was that at that time we were working on this thing called Zendesk and chat integration, which is basically to integrate the chat product into the other part of the entire Zendesk product suite. And how and where do we test that? So I'm pretty sure everyone is familiar with this. Test on production. So I mean, of course, we as engineers, we don't see ourselves as like this, but we see ourselves as real men. So, but again, there's still this question about how did we test that Zendesk and chat integration? Unfortunately, it was really done on production. So you push, because there was no other way to do it. No development environment doesn't work, no staging at all. So we push a change to production. The Zendesk site in San Francisco test it. Oh, no, it doesn't work. We push another change, and then they test, and eventually it works. So that's hashtag true story. Okay, so with that, the team spent like 2 quarters working closely with DevOps to set up a proper staging environment. And DevOps tried very hard to reuse the same set of configuration management script, Chef, and other stuff as the production ones. And the tooling team spent a lot of time updating the codes to remove hard coding and of references to production domain names and URLs and so on. So one particular challenge. This is actually, I see this as a very challenging task for the tooling team because even though on paper we state that we don't do feature developments, we worry about tools and reliability issues, but in fact, to complete these projects, you need it requires us to have full stack understanding of the entire apps, right, from front end all the way back to the back end. Right, so, it's a pretty, and then in addition to that, we also need to understand the other part of the like other Zendesk products and how does the integration happens and so on. So it's a pretty challenging task, and I'm quite proud that we have done that. So once we've done that, we integrate that into the deployment tool and deploy. We form a mini deployment pipeline, deploy the staging, test it on staging, and then deploy the production. So for the first time, we don't have to test on production, which is a big hooray. And we can also test the integration, not on production, on staging. So it feels like party time, but not yet, right? So staging was not used a lot initially. So it was only used by Keyway, which only had one. And there's no buy-in from engineers because this was seen as a process. Why do I have to deploy to another place before I go for production? Right, so the engineers continue to deploy to staging, straight away to production. So it's a sort of like, I see this as an education process whereby we're slowly showing engineers about like bugs on production could really have been caught on staging if they were deployed to staging before. And sometimes there are things that you can only test on staging if you don't want to test on production. Staging is the only environment that you can test, so please deploy to staging, test those things. So we got buy-in. Slowly got buying from engineers, and I'm just showing some numbers from, I think March was around the time, March 2016 was about the time that we completed it, and then you can see that the adoptions of staging deployments increase gradually afterwards. And so again, we end up in the same situation. Engineers love it, like they use it and they love it, and they took over the ownership. Right, they update their codes work on staging, and if they have new configuration changes that they need to make it happen on production, they do it on staging first, and they will proactively work with their ops to make it happen. So the same sentence, the tooling team will step back and relax, and when there are questions, we help answer, but we don't proactively go and do the work by ourselves. So we sit back and relax. So the next thing is development environments. Again, the old story is that before the acquisition, every old guy have his or her own setup, local setup for development, and it's very hard for new engineers to get even onboarded and set up their dev environments. Right, so the backend teams saw the issues and difficulties, and they started to dockerize the full stack, which is a very good first step. But there were issues, right? There's no easy way to integrate the dev environment with the rest of the Zendesk stack. And it's also, so that makes it hard to test integration in the development environment. So again, the team spent like one quarter polishing the Docker dev environments and tried to automate. We spent quite a lot of time trying to automate the setup process to make it like a one-click experience. Right? Before that, you need to have a full list of instructions on how to set up your VirtualBox environments and so on. So with Vagrant, we aim to make it, as you was able to make it like almost close to a one-click experience, right? So, and then we spend a lot of time to make the two Docker environments working, with chat and with the rest of the Zendesk stack. And now it is possible to test the integration in Docker. Oops, again. So again, it's just the same story, right? So developers, engineers, once they try it, they love it, and they will proactively maintain it. So we are sort of like, we don't have to spend a lot of time once these things done. I think this particular one is a bit tricky, so we still have to spend some amount of time, not as little as the other two projects, but this is still not a very significant amount of time. So with this, surprisingly, we were able to form a basic deployment, development to deployment pipeline, which is that now you can develop locally, test in your Docker environment, and again, once it's okay, you deploy the staging, and you test on staging, and then you deploy the production. So it's a mini deployment pipeline, nowhere to be compared with the Baidu and the Linkin pipeline, but it's one that works and helps a lot of in a lot of cases. Now the next thing is about integration test. So again, a bit of history. There was some unit tests, integration tests, but there wasn't a lot of browser tests. The browser tests were written by QA, and tests were somehow flaky, not easily reusable, and most importantly, it's not used as part of the deployment pipeline. So it doesn't feel like they are so useful. I mean, even though they are there, but it's not that useful. Right, so this is mostly because of limited QA resources. There's only one QA engineer in the office at that time. So what we decided to do is that the team decided to take over the ownership of that automation, the browser test. And even though we are not QA, we decided that this is something that is good for the entire deployment pipeline, and we want to make it happen. So we spent a quarter improving the browser test and also trying to make them, integrate them into the deployment pipeline. So we tried very hard to make the test result reliable. At the end of the day, you won't end up in a situation whereby when the tests are read, you know that there's something wrong with the apps. Right? You don't want to say, oh, the tests are read, let me see if the test is flaky and is something else, there's some environment issues and so on. So we try very hard to make that. It's still not 100%, but we are trying very hard to make it happen. So we use Jenkins to run the test, and then we use Samsung for deployment. So we improved the integration between the two tools so that we can put them into the pipeline. So with this work on automatic integration test, we sort of like complete the deployment and the development deployment pipeline into something like this. So develop locally, raise a pull request. That pull request triggers some automation test, the browser test in Travis. And then you deploy the staging. Once you merge the pull request, and automation tests can be run against staging. And if things are OK or bad, you get a notification. And then you decide whether you're going to proceed to production. And again, the same thing runs on production. So that's our current deployment pipeline. It works pretty well for us now. And besides all those major projects, we have a few miscellaneous initiatives. So this one is very interesting. We changed the velocity, and we back off from continuous deployment down to a weekly release, because we saw that there are problems with the continuous deployments, and it introduced a lot more issues than it should have. So we decided to back off and do a scheduled weekly releases for the front end components. And also we decided to do staged rollout. We deploy to beta and canary first, and that's where our own support advocates use. So we do make our own support advocates dog food our release first, and then if they are okay, a week later we deploy to production environment for all customers. So we build tools to support progressive rollout, and I think that works quite well. And we started to introduce incident management and postmortem. So actually, I should put this before that, because it's through the incident management and postmortems that we discovered that we should do this, and it helps us. Okay, so I've talked about a bunch of projects and initiatives, and those seem to be like random topics that just come out of our mind, and like, it doesn't really map back to the entire context of site reliability engineering. So in the next few slides, I'm just trying to map these things back to the topics and ideas that we'll talk about in the SRE book, and see if we can make some more relevance. One idea to talk about in the book is that we want to ensure that there is a durable focus on engineering. I mean, they were talking about like the ops team should have like 50% of engineering time, but on our side, it's the other side, right? The other way around. Engineering team, but spend like more than 50% of the time on tooling and reliability, and even things more ops related. So the idea is that we want dedication. Right? Dedication is the key. And chapter 5 talk about eliminating toil, and things like simple deployment automation, automated integration test is what I see as matching this topic. And chapter 8 talk about release engineering. That is the whole deployment pipeline thing that I have been talking about, like simple deployment, staging environment, conscious decision on the release process and easy to maintain, easy to use development environment and so on. And even the automated integration tests are part of that. And testing for reliability, of course, the testing part of it. And that requires your tests to be there, your staging environment, your development environment, depending on where you want to run the test. So all of these I thought, as, I mean, is still indeed relevant. And so in the next few slides, I'm just going to summarize the lessons that we have learned from these, all these exercises. So first of all, very important, you don't have to do site reliability engineering just for the sake of doing SRE. Right? So you don't look at the book, oh, now there's this book and Google is promoting this topic. Me as a small company, small team, how can I do that? Right? So as for small teams, you don't really think about problems from that point of view. What you would usually do is that you identify your issues, your needs, and you try that as you grow, and then you will try to solve them and fix them, and at the end of the day, you will be like us. You find that you are actually doing things that are mentioned in the SRE book, in the SRE practice. So you don't even need a dedicated SRE team, like in our case. Right, so another thing that I found very interesting is that I find this is what I call a preventive versus reactive measures. So I find that a lot of things that we have been doing is, it belongs to the category of preventive measures, right? We're trying to prevent problems from happening in production, like better development environment, discover bugs early in development, staging environment, discover problems in staging first, right? And deployment pipeline, running tests and so on, right? We're trying to prevent things from happening in production. Whereas I see that a lot of the things and practice talk about in the SRE books is more about reactive, right? When the issue happens, how do we handle those? So I see this as these two aspects as complementary. So this is a topic to be discussed further. But that's one thing I learned. Another category of lessons learned is that it takes time to change engineers' mindset. So I rather prefer a bottom-up rather than a top-down approach, like forcing the process on top of the developers. You just let the tools speak for themselves. Let the usefulness of the tools speak for themselves. And once the engineers, once the product team engineers see the benefits, they will use it. And once they start to use it and get addicted to it, they will even own it. Right. So you don't even have to ask for that. Right. So another thing is related to the change in the release process. So I know people are quite fascinated about the move fast and break things, Facebook motto. And so we started with that, and then we sort of like we realized that you need to be a bit more of a reliability conscious about the deployment process. Right. If you don't have a proper way of detecting and monitoring your production environment, you don't have a proper way to fall back, then you shouldn't be like move fast and break things, because when things are broken, you don't have a good way to recover. Right. So that's another takeaway. Oops. Again, you know what I'm trying to talk about. All right, so I really find that having a dedicated tooling team, it really helped, right? It's just a four-person team spending a year, and we did so much with all these different projects. And the tooling team, as I said, the challenge in the tooling team is that even though it's a tooling, it doesn't develop like product features, customer-facing features, but it requires the team to understand the full stack and know the entire system inside out. Otherwise, you can't just develop tools on top of it. Right, so once the tools are working, let the engineers own them, and engineers help to maintain the tools, and the tooling team will sit back and relax and work on the next project. So without this, you can't really scale, because if the tooling team has to constantly be maintaining the old projects, then you are sort of like bound with the number of past projects that you have worked on, right? So so these are some slides I just added just now after watching the two talks previously. So small team versus big guys. So this is the mini deployment pipeline that I just mentioned. And look at this. It's just a small step in our pipeline, and it becomes like this, right? So I fancy this, and I hope we're there one day. But for a small team, you don't have to go to that extent. So I think there's some more. Okay, again the same thing. Development framework at Baidu. Yes, develop locally. It becomes a complicated process, but it helps, I'm sure. But you don't need to be there again, right? So small teams, yeah, feel free to do what you need. So at the end of the day, right, so just before I wrap up, there are a lot of things that you guys may be expecting, but I haven't really touched, and because we haven't done that before. A database, data center operation, what do you do with the hardware? We have talked about software so far, what do you do with hardware, service level objectives, and monitoring, incident management, and so on. Like, so many things talk about in the book, but I'm not going to talk about them because we haven't done that yet. We didn't have that need yet. So we didn't even have a proper SRI team as defined in the, as most of you guys are familiar with. We are just a tooling team without even like proper shell and sudo access on production environment. But we are getting ready for those things, right? So with all these projects that we have done so far, we are getting ready and one step and steps closer to that so-called ideal scenario. So my takeaway is that small teams identify your reliability issues, address them, repeat, and you will get there. That's all. Thank you.